Okay, so I'm going to launch right into a Dharma talk on equanimity. So the word in Pali is upekkha, and we translate this word upekkha to this English word equanimity, which is kind of a funny word because unless we're talking about this very Buddhist practice, concept, experience, it's not a word we use a lot in English. And so I find it actually quite useful to find other translations besides the word equanimity, or the other word we use a lot for upekkha in English is balance, which is a good word, but kind of vague. So I want to share some other translations that have been helpful to me that might be helpful to you. Thich Nhat Hanh, Zen, famous Buddhist Zen teacher, translates the word upekkha into inclusiveness. This capacity to inhabit the present moment with inclusiveness. We're not pushing anything away. We're kind of letting it be. And Bhikkhu Bodhi, a very revered Buddhist scholar in the Theravadin tradition, translates upekkha as in the middleness, to be in the middle of this moment with a non-reactive presence, in the middleness. And then I heard Buddhist teacher Christiane Wolf speak about equanimity. She speaks English, but she grew up in Germany. And the German translation of the word upekkha, when you translate the German word into English, the most accurate way to describe that is letting it be-ness. Letting it be-ness, letting it be as it is, just this moment. It doesn't mean we're just going flat to the moment. Responsiveness is natural, but in the moment that a moment is arising, there's this kind of pause of allowing it all to be what it is. And there's so much possible wisdom and competent, skillful responsiveness that can arise out of that pause, out of that moment of allowing. So, some of you may have heard the Shantideva quote, "Where would I find enough leather to cover the entire surface of the earth? But with leather soles beneath my feet, it's as if the whole world has been covered." And then the story that's been developed out of that quote, as sometimes told in a Buddhist context, is a story of a queen who lives in a land where everybody goes with their bare feet and the royalty is carried on litter, carried up. And one day she decides to come down off of her carriage and walk the land. And she steps on a sharp rock and is badly hurt. So she asks her, entourage to cover the earth in leather, which isn't possible to do. She's wanting to protect her people, but it's not possible to cover the whole land in leather. And finally, a wise person says, "Why don't you just cover your feet? Why don't we just cover our feet?" And so they do, and shoes are invented. That's the tale. And I'm mentioning this now because this practice, which is with our mindfulness, is actually not, it's actually achievable. It doesn't have to be like a constant thing, but in a given lived moment, we can come into awareness and just let the moment be what it is for while we're there in it. That's like putting shoes on our feet because the world is going to be what it is. We can't change that. It's going to be full of the various sorrows and challenges that it's full of. But what we can do is develop these practices. One essential one is equanimity, but there are others as well. Of course, as we all know, mindfulness, loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, generosity, patience, truthfulness, the list goes on. But equanimity is a key one because we can't get to those others if we're going immediately into reactive response. But if we have this capacity to let the world be what it is, but drop into the middle of it, in the middleness, letting it be-ness, and just open into an allowing, that space gives rise to, as I said, skillful response. Wayne Dyer said, "Peace is the result of training your mind to process life how it is, rather than how you think it should be." So as you can see, part of the key to equanimity is coming to some acceptance in general about the non-controllability, unpredictability, and the sorrow and loss. It's a part of life for everyone. Our minds can imagine perfection, but that isn't a very useful capacity because we're much better served when we can allow life to be what it is rather than constantly trying to push it and change it and manipulate it and control it and feeling the reactivity and the distress and the dysregulation that comes from that attitude toward life. So, equanimity, inclusiveness, standing in the middleness, letting be-ness. Tari Brach calls it a way of finding some balance, some inner clarity and presence and perspective in the midst so that we can respond to our world with care. We already stand in the midst of this life as it is. The question is just, what do we do with that? Do we fight it? Or do we learn to drop into this kind of spacious center of the moment and use our mindfulness to cultivate non-reactive awareness? Opening for a moment to I don't know, just beingness, and then allowing the heart to radiate its wisdom, which will be different depending on what's needed. It might be the compassion of setting a firm boundary. It might be appreciating the flower by the side of the road. It might be friendliness towards ourselves when we can't finish our to-do list because we're fatigued, rather than the reactivity of people pleasing rather than setting a boundary, not seeing the flower because we're so lost in thought, kicking ourselves for being fatigued and not getting our to-do list done. You know, these kind of habituated reactive responses that actually increase our suffering. With the ability to pause, let the moment be, see what's there, we can respond with care, wise care. Tara Brach tells a story about two mice on their spinning mouse wheels. One is frantically spinning its wheel, and the other one is sitting still at the bottom of the stopped wheel. The one that's sitting is saying to the other, "I had an epiphany." That epiphany is that realizing that in any moment, whether it's a pleasant moment or a neutral moment or a challenging moment, we can drop the spinning and just notice. That's equanimity. Many of you know that Holocaust survivor and philosopher and psychologist Viktor Frankl has a famous quote: between the stimulus and the response, there's a space. And in that space is your power and your freedom. Between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space is your power and your freedom. What I've found in my own practice, and you can see if you can relate to this or not, is that the space is only there for me if mindfulness is also there. Otherwise, you know, automatic mind, default mode network, habit mind is in charge, and I go straight from stimulus to reaction. But what Frankl is pointing to is that there is always, in any moment, including this one we're in right now, and you can do it right now with me, the possibility to notice what's going on in the moment and kind of inhabit the center with a letting be kind of an attitude. Just this, or this too. That's the pause. That's the space. What Viktor Frankl noticed is, in that space is your power and your freedom. Because when we inhabit that space consciously, which is mindfulness, we have choice about how we respond. One choice is whatever our old habit was, but there can be other choices too. I want to share a couple of stories that illustrate this. First of all, just the story of the young Bodhisattva, Prince Siddhartha, when he was a boy, sitting underneath a rose apple tree. His parents had taken him to a harvest festival, a plowing festival, actually, is what it says in the sutta. And they were all involved with, you know, oxen plowing fields and so forth. And the young Siddhartha was sitting underneath a rose apple tree. And he had this sort of moment of grace, non-intentional, where he just dropped fully into the moment. There was no grasping, there was no pushing away, there was just the equanimity, the letting be-ness. And then fast forward to when he's 30 and sitting underneath the Bodhi tree. So many of the Buddha's key moments happened underneath trees. So fast forward 30 to when he's 30 years old and he's sitting under the Bodhi tree, having said, I'll sit here until I die if I can't realize the way out of suffering. And he had that memory of being a boy sitting underneath the rose apple tree. And that memory helped him, helped kind of the whole cascade of events that led him to awaken. It's said that equanimity is very close to what it feels like to be an arahant, an awakened being. This capacity to be with what is, no matter how chaotic, dropped into the center, like the center of a hurricane, and just seeing, just being with, just allowing. So that's one story, the Buddha under the rose apple tree. And then I want to share a story from my own life last Sunday. So I'm writing and teaching a lot, and I've been recently teaching about equanimity, which is why I'm talking about it with you tonight. And last week, some friends released a film, which was a fantastic film, and there was a gathering to support them afterwards. And I am not a big party person, and plus I've got, like all of us, the 2.5 years of COVID making me ever more cautious and anxious. It was outside and I was fine, but I had that with me, kind of some of that baggage, that conditioning, plus my old childhood, do I belong stuff about parties. And I was at the top of the stairs on the deck, and to walk down to be outside with people was going to be a bit of a challenge because there were some people occupying the steps, chatting, and there were more people. And it just from a distance, it looked like everybody was all connected and I was on the outside. And my mind brought up something that maybe it had stored away since fourth or fifth grade. Like, I hate parties. Do I belong here? I want to be home with my dog. And because I have been, you know, really practicing with equanimity for some time now, I knew to drop into the moment, to let go of the story, to feel my feet, the soles of my feet, to take a breath, to be with the moment and let it be what it is, this uncomfortable sort of old conditioning moment. And then from that moment of I don't know was an inclination from the heart to incline toward friendliness, towards myself and everyone there. And so then I walked down into the gathering and it seemed like everyone was nicer than they'd ever been before. But that's not what happened. It was just, I had done a little U-turn from old kind of habits and the kind of the direction that typically takes me with a slight shutdown, that kind of alien, slightly alienating shutdown. It was more of the heart had that moment and then had a wise instruction. And I had a very different experience than I have had in the past. So that's the kind of thing, that's a very simple story, but it's the kind of thing that, you know, we think of equanimity, or I did, as this kind of so almost inaccessible state that one lands and lives in at some point down the road. But really, equanimity can be a pause in this moment and just drop into the middle and notice and then see what the heart says. Take a moment with me now just to reflect. Can you recall a time where you were experiencing let it be-ness? Letting things be what they were. It could have been a chaotic time where you had dropped in the center of the hurricane, like I said. Or it could have been a pleasant time where it was pretty easy to let things be. And see if you can bring that state to mind where there was a willingness to allow the moment to be what it is, even just for a pause. In another way, sometimes it's hard to just remember things on the spot. So another way to bring in this feeling of equanimity is just imagine a mountain and kind of in your imagination let yourself be the mountain, steadfast in the middle of storms or sun, animals having their whole lifespans and trees coming and going, but this mountain just rooted in the middle of it all. So I want to say a little bit about what equanimity is not, inclusiveness. So it's not reactivity, it's not craving or aversion, which are both essentially rejections of the present moment. When we're craving something, we're leaning out of this moment. There's something about this moment that we're feeling is lacking. And we're imagining something in the future that would somehow be more satisfying. Even if the future is just like an hour away. And similarly, aversion, well, and it's understandable, you know, especially when we've got pain. If there's physical pain or emotional pain, mental pain, relational pain, it's natural for us to have aversion, to not like, to not want. And it's very appropriate to bring in compassion and take care of ourselves in every way we can. And at some point, taking a pause, dropping into the middle of those aversive moments, and just observing, just being with, can be a really supportive kind of reset for how we're dealing with the challenge. Buddhist teacher Christina Feldman says, "Craving and aversion, pursuit and refusal, are toxic elements that create and recreate distress in our lives." So, equanimity is not that reactivity, that automatic reactivity. That's what we're working with when we bring the pause in. We're putting a little kind of stopgap in that reactivity. It's also not shutting down. It's not indifference. It's not caring. Equanimity's by its nature, infused with love and kindness, compassion, and appreciation. Those other Brahma Viharas, those other divine abodes of the heart, are all present in equanimity. There's love there, there's care, and there's wisdom. So if you notice reactivity, that can be a mindfulness bell, drop into the present moment. Or the other direction, if you notice shutting down, indifference, not caring, that can be a mindfulness bell. Drop into the present moment. Inhabit the center. We learn to respond rather than react, and that takes awareness. So, as I said before, mindfulness precedes equanimity. And when we develop the capacity to pause and be present, we've developed the capacity to bring those little equanimity moments into our lives that can make such a big difference. A Dharma student living on a busy, noisy street in Manhattan hung on the inside of his front door. It opened onto the sidewalk, a sign that said Meditation Hall. So he had a daily reminder to himself that to make his inner world one of equanimity, dependent on a world of ideal conditions, was a recipe for reactivity. Rather, allowing the world to be how it is and practicing the skillful response of taking that pause. On my desk, I have a small desk and a laptop here in front of me. And on the right is are my books and papers, my notes for the talk. And on my left, I keep a statue of Guan Yin, who is the Buddhist Bodhisattva of compassion. She's the Chinese version of Avalokiteshvara. And then I keep this card. It's a 99-cent card. Can you see it? From Trader Joe's. And it's just a simple image of a little cottage on the beach with some palm trees behind it. And for me, this card reminds me that any moment, no matter what's arising, including some really challenging things, but no matter what's arising, that there's always the possibility of dropping into the middle of the moment, in the middleness, and that there's some space there. And for me, that space is beautiful. Many Buddhist teachers talk about the essence of who we are is loving awareness. We access that with mindfulness and equanimity practice. This beautiful vantage point of allowing as everything's unfolding and changing all around us. And it can seem, and certainly it seemed to me often, like too big a job to get equanimity going when life is so challenging. And so it's really helpful for me, and so I'll share with you, to remind myself over and over and over and over and over that it's always and only ever about this moment now. It's not like I'm saying I'm going to be equanimous for the rest of my life. It's more of an invitation. Can I drop into the moment now and see what's here? Take a pause and see what emerges. So, in a moment, I'm going to sing you a song that I wrote with some friends about equanimity. But I want to remind us, so there's a number of different ways to practice equanimity, and I've been talking a lot about the essential nature of mindfulness, which is sort of the ground. I mean, the Buddha taught a mindfulness as the, way to end sorrow. A big promise. So mindfulness and taking just this much, just what's here now, really helpful for equanimity. And then the second thing is, as I mentioned when we were doing the meditation, finding a phrase that's good enough to remind the mind about this possibility of dropping into the moment. It's like this. Just this. This too. Sometimes Tara Brach has taught, I consent, or this belongs, including all the resistance, letting it be. May I accept this moment as it is. It is as it is. I tend to use just this or this too. I have a relative who's aging and repeating themselves a lot and needing to tell long stories about the old days that we've heard many, many times. I love this relative, and I can feel restlessness arising in me sometimes as they tell their story for the many, umpteenth time. Well, I open to this too. And what naturally comes from taking that pause is patience, which is what I would want someone to offer me in the same situation. And it feels for me so much better to go to patience than to go to restlessness and impatience. It's an amazing way that equanimity can lead us into other skillful responsiveness. So a little phrase that can remind the mind. And there's much more that can be said. Other teachings, impermanence, the three characteristics of existence, the eight worldly winds. There's so much wonderful. There are books written about equanimity. So if this particular practice speaks to you, know that this is just a little tiny piece. There's so much out there to support you in deepening in this practice. All right, so I'm going to share with you the lyrics to the song I want to sing with you. So, because I know, oh, fooey, I have to just find it here. Okay, here it is. So that for some people are visual and it's helpful to have the words in front of you. This is just a page out of my songbook that I use on Tuesday nights. Okay, I hope you can see that. Sam, some thoughts on equanimity. Sorry. It's like this. It can be no other way. Everything that came before has led us to this moment. It's like this. So open and let go. Bring awareness and acceptance to this moment as it passes. Here I am. Life arising as it will. How can I bend gracefully with the wind surrounding me? Here I am. Life brings both sorrow and joy, letting go to fight the blame. Deep calm infuses me. Stand in the heart of the moment, inner stability. Return to a place of stillness, equanimity. Just this much, seeing clearly into now. No need for all the stories, just naming what is present. Just this much, without reactivity. I don't have to push. Clutch, I can simply let it be. Stand in the heart of the moment, inner stability. Return to a place of stillness, equanimity. Stay awake to indifference, to don't care. You can feel your heart respond without getting swept away. Stay awake. The promises are great, radiance. Exalted mind are the praises Buddha sang, are the praises. All right. Thank you for your kind attention.
Nancy, do you want to read the meta cards now?
Meta for Marion and David, may they live with ease. Meta for Linda, may she be well. Meta for Judy and Allison, may they continue to heal. Meta for Kathleen, living with stage 4 cancer and all the unpleasantness it entails. Meta for Linda, may she feel better soon. And thank you for helping make this evening sangha possible. Meta for Marion, may she find some ease and joy in her life. Meta for everyone in this sangha who makes our Sunday nights happen. Meta for Chris with cellulitis and rheumatoid arthritis. Meta for Loie, who injured her leg. And meta for Karen.
Thank you. I realized I didn't ask if there were any questions or comments, and we do have a couple more minutes before we do our dedication of merit. Did anybody have any? Yeah, Deborah.
That was fabulous.
Thank you.
Start to finish. It's a pleasure to see you again.
Good to be here with you.
And just very briefly, something was going on for me this week with two funerals on Tuesday and a birth in the middle and organizing people and cars. And at one point I thought, I can't relax. I can't relax. I can't relax. And then I thought, yes, I can. This is exactly when I can call up on my tools. And what you said about the guy in New York with the street and the meditation hall sign, I had that moment when I thought, oh my God, I have to get this and that. I can't relax. And this and that cousin and this one. And now this baby's here 3 weeks early. And between the birth and the death, I mean, the circle of life, the whole thing, I didn't miss out on that. But it was in that moment when I thought, ah, but I can. Ah, but I can. This is exactly what practice is for. Bless you. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for that wonderful story.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay. I'm going to share my screen again and offer a sung dedication of merit. I'm going to talk about it while I call it up here. So this song was translated from the Mandarin by the abbot of the... Oh, shoot, I think I'm going to have to do this. By the abbot of the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery. Oh, good. There it is. So it's the Pure Land tradition, which is a different tradition than I believe many of you have a background in. My background is in Vipassana, Theravada. Pure Land is the most popularly practiced form of Buddhism in the world. And this is their dedication of merit. And you can see it's a lot longer than "May the merit of our practice be for the benefit of all beings." So he translated into the Mandarin and then put it to this tune, which was written by Canadian singer-songwriter Lorena McKenna. The basic idea is to invoke this wish for wisdom and compassion for all beings, because wisdom and compassion are the source of freedom from suffering, of well-being. So may we have this wisdom and compassion for ourselves and our own lives. And may our own lives be a benefit to others so that wisdom and compassion can deepen for all beings everywhere. May every living being, our minds as one and radiant with light, share the fruits of peace with hearts of goodness, luminous and bright. If people hear and see how hands and hearts can find in giving unity, may our minds awake to great compassion, wisdom, and to joy. May kindness find reward. May all who sorrow leave our grief and pain. May this boundless light meet the darkness of our sacred night. Because our hearts are one, this world of pain turns into paradise. May all become compassionate and wise. May all become compassionate and wise. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Wonderful to spend some time with you in this way. Really grateful.